This is the May 13th, 2025 regular meeting of the Chatham County Savannah Metropolitan Planning Commission. The Planning Commission consists of Ms. Karen Jarrett, Chairwoman, Mr. Travis Coles, Vice Chairman, Mr. Tom Wildwoody, Secretary, Ms. Lorraine Bowles, Treasurer. Board members are Mr. Dwayne Stevens, Ms. Tracy Ammon, Mr. Joseph Irvine, Mr. Michael Kegler, Ms. Amanda Wilson, Mr. Jay Melder, Mr. Jeff Nortricia, Mr. Joseph Welch, Ms. Corinne Ross, and Mr. Stephen Pluck. The MPC Executive Director is Melanie Wilson.
May 13th, regular meeting of the Chatham County Savannah Metropolitan Planning Commission will now come to order. We're going to pause for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Please be seated. For staff, petitioners, and members of the public who are participating, our procedures will be as follows. The agenda is broken down into several parts. First, notices, proclamations, and acknowledgments. Next, the consent agenda, which consists of items for which the applicant is in agreement with the staff recommendation, and there are no known objections. This will be followed by regular business, old business, and adjournment. For each agenda item on regular business, the staff will make a presentation. The staff presentation will then be followed by a presentation from the petitioner should they elect to do so. The petitioner will be allotted a time frame of no more than 20 minutes. The board may then ask questions of the petitioner or staff for clarification. Afterwards, the floor will be open for public comment. If you wish to comment on the item that the board is considering at the time, members of the public that are in person must fill out a speaker card and give it to staff. If you are participating virtually, use the raise your hand feature on your screen. Do not use the feature until the item you want to comment on is being considered. At the appropriate time, you will be recognized and staff will unmute your microphone. At the end of your allotted time, as determined by the chair, your microphone will be muted and the chair will recognize the next speaker. The total public comment time will be less than or equivalent to the petitioner's presentation time. Therefore, for those participating online, it is important that you use the raise your hand feature during the hearing on that item if you want to speak on a petition. Once the floor is closed for public comment on a petition, no additional public speakers will be allowed. If you are not certain you want to speak, still use the raise your hand feature, or if in person, fill out the speaker card. You will have the option to decline when your name is called. After public comment, the petitioner will have the opportunity for rebuttal, then address any additional needed questions by the board. Finally, the board will take action. The first order of business is approval of the agenda.
Cole's motion to approve the agenda.
No second.
All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? All right. There are three items requested to be removed from the final agenda. The first is a text amendment, special exceptions, variances to the HPC and HDBR. Is there anyone here on that item? All right, and the next item is a map amendment, rezoned from RSF 5 to RSF 10, 4018 Walton Street. Is there anyone here for that item? And finally, a special use permit for a child care center, 418 West Walton Street, 4018 Walton Street. Is there anyone here for that item? All right, I'll entertain a motion.
Cole's motion to remove items 1 through 3 from the final agenda.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. On the consent agenda, we have two things: approval of the April 22nd, 2025 meeting minutes, and authorize the executive director to execute a contract with a consultant for Core MPO SR26 US 80 scoping study phase 2.
Cole,
Anyone have comments? All right, I'll entertain a motion.
Call's motion to approve the consent agenda.
Second? All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, we have no old business, our regular business. The first thing on the agenda is a variance to a general development plan at 2009 East 39th Street.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the Planning Commission. This is Edward Morrow, Director of Development Services here at the MPC. The first request is for a site plan related variance to reduce the minimum required lot width and lot area to create two parcels for single family home development. Subject parcel is at 2009 East 39th Street. You can see it in the aerial on your screen outlined in yellow. To show you the future land use map and the zoning map, this is currently indicated for residential single family use. And the parcel does contain a single family dwelling that was built in the early 1900s, I believe 1939, if I'm not mistaken. The zoning map, you can see that this is RSF6, residential single family 6, which is lots that would typically require 60 foot width and 6,000 square feet in area. And so you can see from this particular map that this parcel contains five existing lots of record that were about 30 feet wide and 100 feet deep traditionally. And so with the adoption of NUZO, we saw many of those combined to create the 60 lot width pattern that you see right now. That is evidenced by a lot of the parcels that have been developed. This particular one, again, it contains this one dwelling at this time, and the petitioner is seeking to subdivide off one parcel that would contain the existing dwelling and to split the remaining ones into parcels that would be approximately 42 feet wide. Just to show you our development standards in RSF6, you can see that they require 6,000 square feet and a minimum 60 feet in width. And so the petitioner is asking for relief from those particular requirements for the purpose of putting two single family homes on each one of the two new lots that would be created here, preserving that existing historic residence. It is of a historic character. It is not designated historic, but again, it was built in the early 1900s. With that, MPC staff is recommending approval as proposed subdivision is generally consistent with the existing pattern of single family home development in this area. And it's unlikely to be of significant detriment to surrounding properties. Happy to answer any questions.
All right. Is the applicant available? Would you like to speak to us?
Sure.
Please state your name for the record.
My name is Scott Cook with Cook Architecture, and I'm representing Michael Johnson as the property owner. I think Edward explained it pretty well, but I think if you have any questions for me, I'm happy to answer any of them.
All right, are there any questions for staff or the applicant? All right, any discussion? I don't have any cards. We don't have anybody online. Okay.
Call's motion to approve staff's recommendation.
I'll second.
All right, I have a motion and a second on the floor. Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Mr. Coles?
Yes.
Mr. Kegler?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Mr. Notrika?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Ms. Ross?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Wadwoody?
Yes.
I too say yes. Motion passes. All right, the next item that we have is variance to a general development plan, 275 Fort Argyle Road.
Excellent. Thank you, Madam Chair. The second request is one to permit a 365-day lease for campsites, individual campsites, where a 90-day maximum is currently permitted by the zoning ordinance. The parcel that you see outlined on your screen is the Creek Fire Camping Resort, and this was recently rezoned back in 2017 to permit the use in its current form. Just to share with you, you can see the future land use map indicates that this is for parks and recreation largely. You can see it surrounded by some conservation area as well as low density single family residential development. It is currently zoned A1, which is agriculture. And so just to share some zoning history with you, at the time of its rezoning, this was identified to align most closely with use 32B. In the previous zoning ordinance, which is a campground or recreational vehicle park. And this is significant because it included amenities that are not ordinarily seen in an RV park development. So proposed were 229 RV spaces, 18 cabin sites, 5 tent camping sites, and amenities to include a general store, clubhouse, boathouse spa, and restaurant. And so this is several years later, we can see that many of those amenities have been developed. A first round of camping sites were also developed, but we have since that time had a change in our regulatory scheme. And so NUZO was adopted effective late 2019. It carried over many of those original regulations, but it added just a couple. And so for the record, I will read the campground and recreational vehicle park definition so that we understand what the ordinance's expectation is with this. A campground or recreational vehicle park is a facility that provides land to transient guests whose use personal tents, travel trailers, motorhomes, or recreational vehicles, recreational vehicles as temporary accommodations. Cabins may also be provided, related accessory uses such as bathhouses, on-site storage, an event space, passive and active recreational facilities, a clubhouse, restaurant with alcohol sales by the drink, a general store with incidental sales of beer and wine, and a caretaker's residence are all permitted and limited to registered guests and their guests. And so, again, you can see that those 5 original standards were carried over as well as some others. We'll highlight at this point that the supplemental use standards limit this use to 90 days. So just to offer you an aerial view of the subject parcel as it's currently developed, you can see that it does have many of those campsites already developed around kind of a central common area with the previously mentioned amenities. This is the site plan that was submitted in association with the request. You can see that proposed are several new campsites that would surround many of those that are already established. And these indicated in red are proposed to be for 365-day use as opposed to the typical 90-day stay as is currently permitted. In looking at a couple of criteria, I'll just point out, in staff's review of this, this appears to be somewhat inconsistent with the general thrust of the ordinance in that transient and lodging uses are intended to be for a short term. There are several definitions that staff included here for your understanding. I'll call out transient guest, which states that this is a place that a person stays for not more than 30 days. Again, this particular use already permits someone to stay for 90 days. Also, a lodging establishment, again, transient guests whose usual place of residence is elsewhere. And lodging establishments are within that category. Sorry, recreational vehicle parks and campgrounds fall within that lodging establishment use. Also, staff noted that this would, to some extent, offer this particular applicant a special privilege not granted to others, and that typically those who are seeking to establish a permanent or semi-permanent residential use would be required to rezone, most notably to something like a manufactured home park in this particular instance. And not only that, the vehicles that are typically used to house residents are for a temporary purpose. They're not vehicles that are designed for long-term use. So again, the transient versus permanent, semi-permanent nature of the use, the fact that it is a lodging use, and also the use of recreational vehicles, staff found to be inconsistent with the intent of the ordinance. And so on that basis, staff does recommend denial of this request. I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
All right, thank you. Is the applicant here?
He's online?
Yes,
sir. All right, if
yes, I'm an agent for the applicant.
Okay, can you please state your name for the record?
Yes, my name is Gary Curl.
All right, do you have anything to add or?
Yeah, I just some clarification and then something to add as well. Those sites that were pointed out in red are existing sites. They're not proposed sites. And I think I heard that staff said they were proposed. They're only proposed for the longer length of stay. And just some clarification on that on my end. Understand how the 365-day could imply permanency. That is not the intent. We are responding to our customers' requests for a little bit longer stay, and was wondering if something somewhat of a shorter stay would be an option, say 180 days, or is it the fact that it's anything over 90 days that's causing the concern?
All right, are there any questions for the applicant or for staff? Go ahead, Mr. Coles.
Mr. Morrow, would you answer the gentleman's question, please?
Sure. Again, you can see that the definition of transient suggests that these are folks who are at this location for not more than 30 days. So even at 90 days, the ordinance is a little bit more generous with this particular use. Staff would say that 90 days is probably the most appropriate time frame for a stay in this context.
All right, other questions? Discussion? I'm open for a motion.
Why would he motion to accept staff's recommendation?
Stevens, second.
All right, I have a motion to approve staff recommendation to keep it at 90 days. And a second on that, Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Mr. Coles?
Yes.
Mr. Kegler?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Mr. Nochica?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Ms. Ross?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Roy-Woody?
Yes.
And I too say yes. Motion passes. Thank you. And our last item for today, the last regular business, is special use alcohol, accessory alcohol sales in association with a restaurant at 1722 Haversham Street.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The third petition is, as you stated, a request for a special use permit to establish accessory alcohol sales in association with an existing restaurant at 1722 Haversham. You can see the subject parcel on your screen. This is zoned TC1. This particular block was redeveloped in total. Much of it was vacant. And so this was a development that came in, and it contains commercial uses that are actually adjoining Haversham Street and Price Street here, with some residential adjoining East 34th Street and interior parking. The subject restaurant actually is right here in this corner, and it contains most of this area, but it is located on the corner. Just to show you the future land use map, it is in a traditional neighborhood zoning district. And even though the subject property is zoned TC1, were it zoned TN, it would face the exact same circumstance of requiring a special use permit. So it happens to be negligible in this point. TC1 is the zoning for, as you can see here, the subject parcel, as well as this parcel that contains cotton and rye across the street. And this is, again, just so you can see the footprint here, this is where the restaurant is with the kitchen at the rear. You can see a view from the street. In looking at the standards, retail consumption of alcohol requires a special use, and it says that such use shall be permitted in the TC1 only with grant of a special use permit. And these are the criteria. In looking at these, there was only one that I wanted to call out. Whether or not the special use is detrimental to the public health, safety, or welfare, in a previous zoning action, there was a special use permit granted here. And so with no notes of significant detriment, staff does recommend approval on the basis of the prior establishment of the exact same use under a different ownership. Staff recommends approval with one condition, that the special use permit be non-transferable, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
All right, and the applicant is online with this one as well? All right.
Correct.
Please go ahead when you get an opportunity and state your name for the record.
Andrea Canella.
Hi, would you like to share anything?
No, I'm just here in case you guys have any questions.
Any questions for the applicant or staff? All right, any discussion? I'll entertain a motion.
Call's motion to approve staff's recommendation.
Ross, second.
All right, I have a motion and a second to approve. Ms. Amick?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Mr. Coles?
Yes.
Mr. Kegler?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Mr. Nochika?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Ms. Ross?
Yes.
Mr. Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Wywoody?
Yes.
And I too say yes. Motion passes. Well, that was pretty easy. We do have one other. We don't have any presentations. No staff reviews, approved staff reviews. We do have other business and MPC video.
We're a small agency overall, but we impact people's lives a lot. Welcome to Chatham County Savannah Metropolitan Planning Commission, better known as the MPC. We are the bridge between Chatham County, Savannah, and our neighboring communities. Part of my role is to make sure that we have the resources that we need in order to work with the board who are appointed by both the city and the county to create a vision on how we're going to move forward with looking at urban planning, looking at the planned environment, looking at historic preservation, looking at transportation, and making sure that we've got a strong foundation and that we've got the resources in order to support that vision. One of the beauties about being in this job and working with this organization is that it's different every day.
I'd say that we are the place where new developments start as ideas, and we get to see them go from kind of idea to fruition.
We take into consideration what has been said by the folks that might live in the immediate vicinity, but we also look at how is it impacting the community, the region, the neighborhoods, because that's important. That's what planning is about.
Planning in general, you have to wear a lot of different hats, and a lot of times I see myself as a translator. For example, my background is in ecology and marine science. If we have wetlands on a site, how are we planning for those? How can we put this in terms of site development? I act as that facilitator and that translator between the scientific journal papers and then the staff report or a plan that we're writing.
Public input is critical, so we as professionals, we come to the table with all sorts of ideas, but if we don't hear that local input, it's really difficult to know what people who are living in these communities feel about the changes that are taking place, about the things that they would like to see happen. So I think it's a really important balance to hear from them so that we know we're not just taking them in a direction that they're not pleased to go in.
There are times when the community might want something and they advocate very hard, but it might not be in the best interest of the community as a whole.
We try and arbitrate, I'd say, in the best way that we can. We talk about the things that are established in some sort of a policy document, and we attempt to navigate the concerns that the public is expressing or other interested parties and try and find a middle ground so that everybody gets what they need. Every 5 years, a community is supposed to update its comprehensive plan. It is the thing that, as I sit down and I consider any individual project that comes in, I weigh it against the identified needs of the community. There are a number of policies that are adopted by our municipal governments, so the city of Savannah or Chatham County, that represent things that are somewhat aspirational. It's their goals, it's their needs. It's that group of documents that generally provides the basis, and it talks about how an idea actually has to be carried out.
I think that people get us confused with regards to being the final decision authority, and we're not. We are a recommending body. People come in, they make an application, we talk with people in the community to get feedback from them, we deal with our reports, and then people that sit on that commission's board, they make the final decisions. Even if you're not happy with the decision that's made, you always have the opportunity to appeal. Sometimes you have to make those tough recommendations that you might have a few people that just hate it, but at the end of the day, the right thing to do is to recommend either approval or denial. But again, that's why we make those recommendations. We look at all of the data, we take the consideration information that we get, but we try to be objective with regards to what we do with that information and how it's used.
Advanced planning is primarily in charge of the comprehensive plan. Special projects takes on smaller projects that are important for the whole, but don't fit neatly into any of the other departments. But it'll pull in team members from historic preservation, development services and current planning, transportation. We maybe need to understand what is the population growth going to look like to estimate, okay, what are the facilities needed for our school system? What are the climate conditions that we're going to be facing, and how can we build resilience into our planning processes? The world we're living in now may not look the same in 20 years. It may not look the same in 50 years or 100 years. We're thinking about all of these things as we're putting together our plans and projects.
We play a vital role because we're kind of like the repository of information. We collect a lot of data with SAGES, and a lot of people in the community depend on SAGES.
SAGES is actually a collaborative effort between the MPC, Chatham County, City of Savannah, and other regional governments and agencies. GIS stands for Geographic Information System or Science. It's a computer-based tool that stores, analyzes, and displays spatial data. GIS allows the user to take data from different themes and overlap them to see together. When reviewing an area for site development, different things you would look at would be soil types, flood zones, current development in the area, what else is going on, what are the land uses. And you look at those things and you can put them all together visually and see them in one place, as opposed to trying to look at them separately, either on different maps or even as different tables. So you can take historical data and then projected data and create a visual where you can see it change over time.
Working with both the city and the county to deal with planning is great because we're in this unique position to get the information and to look at holistically at the whole county.
One of the most important projects that we're continuously working on is we work directly with the Chatham County Communication Center, or the otherwise known as 911 Dispatch. The Communication Center has a completely different program that pulls our data in and then uses it in their system so that emergency responders can get to the person that needs them as fast as possible, where they're located, and the fastest way to get to where they need to go. So we don't create all of the data that we use and share here at SAGES and the MPC. We work with all of those agencies so that the experts in each field create and edit their data, and then we're the SharePoint.
As a consequence of all of this information that we get in helping to determine your quality of life, we look at road networks. How do you get to work? Where do your kids go to school? Locations, things of that nature.
I am the Director of Transportation Administration. And we actually manage the Coastal Region Metropolitan Planning Organization, Core MPO. Without the Core MPO, the federal transportation dollars will not flow to our area. So we mostly deal with bigger projects like I-16 widening project and Jimmy DeLoach Parkway extension. We just process the allocation of funds. So without Core MPO's planning process, you cannot have that. Our consideration has to be regional, because travel really doesn't stop at the border.
As we're looking at getting development to occur from the infrastructure side, whether it is rails and trails and trying to have some connectivity with that, that's something that's really important.
We actually have like 3 tiers of prioritization in our 2050 plan. So the first is needs, so based on congestion, freight, and the second part is the resiliency, and the third level would be equity. We want to promote people for public transit and bike path as well, because people do ride bicycles, especially a lot of students. And we have a lot of tourists over here. And even without tourists, everybody is a pedestrian, right? Because you park your car and you still have to walk to your destination. So we want to improve the sidewalks and the pedestrian connection and the bike lane connection. We really want to focus more energy and investments to promote the multimodal connection, because just the highway doesn't solve all of the problems. You've got to have other alternatives.
Here at the MPC, the Department of Historic Preservation and Urban Design, our primary role is overseeing the boards and commissions. We are also tasked with surveying potential historic districts as well as conservation districts. Given the history of this city and our country, understandably, people are somewhat suspicious if people come in and say, we want to make your neighborhood a historic district, and the people in the community are like, what does that mean to us? We really want the neighborhood to can say, we want this. Probably the biggest challenge we face in the Savannah Downtown Historic District is tourism, proliferation of hotels, because we can weigh in on the design, but we have no control over uses And over time, neighborhoods can change quite dramatically if the use is changing. We also do staff reviews. We have three criteria that we have to apply. So the first one, Secretary of the Interior Standards. Primarily, that's applicable if you had a historic building and you wanted to add on to it. Preserve historic fabric. Differentiate new construction from old. Visual compatibility, which is the second standard we have to apply, means that whatever you're proposing to build or design has to be visually compatible with the contributing buildings to which it is visually related. And then the last standards that we have to apply are the design standards. Those are very specific. There are certain type of materials you can use for exterior walls, masonry, brick. The County Historic Preservation Commission had two sites. One was a house that was self-nominated by the owner of the house, important historic structure. And a gentleman who works for the city of Savannah brought to our attention a historic African-American cemetery that had been overgrown and neglected. He brought it to our attention, and that was approved, and that will now be protected.
It's really important in this time and environment to really be careful about making sure that you are respecting the past, because it's very easy to kind of get caught up in a trend. We continue to think very strategically in ways that we can empower the community and that we can be transformative in ways that we look at addressing problems and issues. We're a small agency overall, but we impact people's lives a lot.
Yay! Thank you. Any questions or comments?
Good job.
All right. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
Cole's motion to adjourn.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, guys.